You're listening to WWBC, Coco, Melbourne, Titusville, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI, Coco, Rockledge, and W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, Palm Bay, and 100.7 FM.
Hello, space and treasure coast. Boy, I didn't think we would make it to 2026 on Viewpoint with Sita and friends, but we have.
Here we are.
We have made it. This is our 15th or 16th year. I have to check. I'm not sure when we started the show. But for listeners who are tuning in today, Happy New Year. My name is Sita Biggie, and this show is called Viewpoint with Sita and friends. We are heard on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7. 99.9, 100.7, and all over God's magnificent planet on the World Wide Web.
That's right. www.1510wwbc.com, and you can hit that listen live button and get us on any one of your streaming devices. Of course, we also archive the shows there. You can look up Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, and you'll see each and every Monday there's a downloadable option. Of course, we take all of those and edit them up and put them on our website, as well as the pictures and some bios about all of the fantastic guests we've had. And just think, Sita, 52 weeks a year we've been on for 15 years, two guests a week. So 104, roughly 104 guests a week times 15 years.
Yeah, and I can't keep up. Sometimes people ask me about a guest or their phone number, or something. I'm like, I can't remember.
That's right. But you can search on the website, cedamediainc.com. It's also on all of our social media sites as well.
Well, thank you. Thank you. So that's the voice of Ellen O'Neill. Ellen and I have been doing this show for as long as we've been on air. And I'm grateful that she's still with me and helping with the website and co-hosting. And I really couldn't have the show without the backup. Danny Whiting runs our board. We have Allie Tambor, who's a friend of Ellen and mine, that comes in every Monday. And I have to say, the new year started off pretty good. Someone asked me, how are you? And I'm like, I'm alive. I'm breathing. Mm-hmm. I think every day we wake up is a good day. And we always say that on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, we want to encourage folks with a functioning brain, a person who can think and do things for others, to find your purpose in life. Because I think once you find your purpose in life and you could communicate and educate others, that's what it's all about. It's leaving a good footprint on Mother Earth for the next generation and our grandchildren. And so with that, I'm going to tell our listeners today, we've got quite an action-packed show today. We try to bring on quality guests on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, whether you want to talk about long-term care, you want to talk about dying with dignity, you want to talk about financial literacy, if you want to be an advocate for clean air, water, sunshine, mental health. We've had so many guests on our show, and it is a learning experience, not just for us, but for a listening audience. And I've become if you all remember the Yellow Pages, people call me all the time to get phone numbers for folks who have written a book, who are running a bank, who has a mortgage company. Some people call me and just ask me if I can help with an elderly parent who need a nurse's aide. And it's all because our show has such quality guests that I'm able to do that.
That's right. And it becomes a great resource and reference for everyone.
Yeah.
It sure does. And of course, through my good friend, Dr. Potomsky, I met a wonderful lady, Deborah Grassman, and she is the director of Opus Peace. And she's going to be talking to us a little bit about her new book, about soul injury and all the stuff going on with that. She is a repeat guest. On our second segment, there's a gentleman sitting next to me, and I must say his aura is very peaceful. You can tell he's a common soul. Mr. Tony Ray, he's the founder of the Florida End of Life Options, and he's here to discuss making those decisions, those very important decisions, while you are alive and well and able to get your needs known, so that when the time comes, you will pass away from God's magnificent planet with dignity, which is what we all want. So on that note, I think that's a great show to have for the first year, you know, for people to make a resolution to talk about it. And we are going to go right to our phones to Deborah Grossman. Hi, Deborah. Thank you so much for taking time to call in on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.
Well, thank you, Sita. I so appreciate your having me and wanting to learn about soul injury and all the ramifications of that. So thank you.
I want to tell our listeners that Opus Peace is a 501c nonprofit organization, and it's administered by volunteers, lots of volunteers, over 35 the last time I heard. And your mission is to provide educational programs to healthcare providers and others to help people reckon with their soul, the wounds that have been caused to their soul. So talk to us a little bit. Bring us up to speed since the last time you were on the show, Deborah, and talk to us about what's going on with soul injury.
Well, yes, our mission and our purpose on this planet, as you put it earlier, is really to help people heal the relationship that they have with themselves. We are on a mission to help heal our hurting world. And I think the way that that occurs, what we have to do is to be able to uncover our real self that's often lying under the facades that we carry and the busyness of our lives and what have you. And we often get separated from our own sense of self. And that is what we call a soul injury. And we say that there are three things that cause you to become separated from your sense of self. And that is unmourned loss and hurt, unforgiven guilt and shame, and fear of helplessness and loss of control. So that's kind of what we're about at Opus Peace. And yes, you are right. This past year, the book Soul Injury, Healing the Relationship You Have with Yourself, came out. And so we have many people doing book circles or book councils around the country. Book communities, and if you think of the word community, it means common unity. And oftentimes when people start uncovering those masks and those things that interfere with us being real, so to speak, that's where we discover ourselves and we find the unity that we have with one another. Because in our soulful self, you know, we're all one, right? There is a oneness there.
Right. And you know what? There are so many people that have so many barriers that keeps them from becoming whole again. Can you talk a little bit about some of the barriers that keeps people back from just healing themselves?
Yeah, well, I think the biggest is fear. And another big one is, you know, the messages that we are sent by advertisements, by, you know, in school, it's always about be more, be strong, be your best self, you know, just be, if you were just more resilient, then you could, you know, you could do it. And and our approach is very different because to me that is a barrier because we also have inside of us, you know, a weak and a small self that struggles, you know, and if we just ignore that and cover it up with, oh, I just have to be stronger. Oh, I just need to infuse more resilience and then I'll be okay. Then that part just gets shoved into unconsciousness and it comes out in subtle and not so subtle ways, but certainly disconnected ways. So in a lot of ways, we talk about being able to re-own and rehome those scattered pieces of self, those pieces that we're ashamed of, those pieces that we think don't matter. Because the truth is, every piece of yourself, every piece represents a part of your soul, and every piece matters. The little and the small and the weak part matters as much as the big and the strong and the powerful parts. They all matter, and it's discovering all of our pieces of self instead of covering up and being ashamed of some pieces and being proud of other pieces.
Yeah. And Deborah, do you feel like some people, they get lost within their own souls and they forget who they are? They forget their dreams. They forget what their purpose in life is. And all this can be caused because that person still has not mourned the loss of something in their soul.
Yes. You know, and when we talk about loss, we're not just talking about the death of someone else. You know, we're talking of, you know, everyday disappointments are losses if you really look at it. And if we pretend like it's not a loss, if we pretend like it wasn't a disappointment and we just cover it up, then that hurt, that feeling of hurt gets buried. And it, unfortunately, it gets buried alive. So you can bury little hurts or you can bury big hurts because they're so overwhelming. So really learning how to grieve, learning how to mourn just everyday losses can be a great way to practice mourning bigger losses. But what I will tell you, if it's okay with you, because I think it kind of summarizes some of what we're talking about, and it definitely plays into what you said in the opening and what your next speaker is getting ready to talk about. And if I can, I'd like to just read the opening paragraph of the Soul Injury book, because I think it'll explain a lot. Would that be okay?
Of course, yes.
Yes, all right. So here's the opening paragraph of the first chapter. Everything I've learned that has really mattered, I learned from the dying. Perspectives shift dramatically as death approaches. The day before you're given a terminal diagnosis, you take your life for granted. The day after, you wake up. Things you thought were so important now seem insignificant. And things that had been escaping your attention suddenly thrust themselves forward with an urgency to complete. That is the gift that death is. Just the threat of it awakens you to what is important and what is not. And these revelations can be as tumultuous as an earthquake or as quiet and penetrating as a gentle snow that visited you overnight. But the stark realization causing the reverberation is the same. You are struck with the abrupt realization of how your life matters and how you matter.
That is so true. I think you're talking to everyone who just turned 50 or 60 as well, because there's something happens as you grow older, bolder, and wiser. You start giving away stuff. The stuff doesn't matter anymore. I think we're all on a spiritual journey at that point because we know that we've spent more time on planet Earth than we have left. And you become in tune with yourself spiritually, because I think we understand that at some point life is getting shorter and we need to start making, you know, our arrangements for when that time comes too.
Yeah, absolutely. If we want to die healed, if that can be, that should, in my opinion, be a goal of everyone, because with you can think in terms of wanting to die healed, it makes you live your life very, very differently. And you're right. You know, I mean, part of my experience that from which I write, obviously, is I am a hospice nurse practitioner who took care of 10,000 dying veterans at the VA. And I can tell you, as you heard in that opening paragraph, that dying people, they become real. You know, the facade crumbles. At some point, it takes a lot of energy to keep up a facade. And at some point, the facade comes down, and when you're at the bedside of someone who is dying, what you will see is someone who becomes very, very real. They're getting ready to meet their maker, so to speak, however you want to define that. But for them, that's as they're laying down their life, and they do it consciously, you know, and hopefully all of us will want a conscious death. And to do that, you're right. You know, when you hit 60 and 70 and 80, hopefully people are starting to open up and think about that and how to do that.
Yeah.
And in fact, you know, on February 2nd, we have National Anchor Your Heart Day, and we do a one-hour webinar prior to that that time where we're, that 3 minutes that we're going to do together to anchor our hearts for that meditation. But prior to that, this year, what we are going to do is a 1-hour webinar. And what it is, the title of it is, You Matter. Let Death Wake You Up Now.
Yeah. Well, for our listeners who are tuning in, we're speaking with Deborah Grassman. And Deborah, you are a psychiatric nurse practitioner, and you are the author of so many books. Peace at Last is one, and The Hero Within. You also wanted to talk to us this morning about your book. The book is now online, and you also have a new book out. You want to talk to us a little bit about the book communities, and I think that it's starting off on January 13th.
Yes, we do. We do book communities, and we have another one getting ready to start on January 13th. It lasts for 8 weeks. It's an hour and a half once a week, and it is fascinating what happens when, I mean, obviously I'm very prejudiced toward the value of this book that I wrote. However, I want to tell you, the material in the book comes alive in a group. And we've done several communities now over this past year since it came out, and it is fascinating to see people bring the material into their real life experiences, and then the stories that they can tell kind of embolden other group members. And so it's a fascinating group that emerges over the week. So I would just encourage this. It's all virtual, so you don't have to leave the comfort of your home. Very easy access, but I think you'll have the links if anybody would like to do that. But they will get the book and be able to participate in that.
I think one of the things that you said, Deborah, this is Ellen, in the opening of the book, you had, you know, one of the powerful words that you had said was perspective. And so soul injury from what you're talking about, too. I mean, we talked about end of life, but soul injuries, like you said, can happen with everyday things. And I think our listeners, I really want to point out the fact that, yes, it can happen. And it is all on perspective. So if you feel that you're injured, if you feel like your soul is injured for something, just because the next person says, oh, you should shake it off, or you should, you know, not cry, or you shouldn't be affected that way. People are getting affected by things that sometimes just by the news, just because they watch the news. They might not even know the people that are involved, but because it affects them in certain ways, I think people forget about the fact that we can all be, all of our souls could be injured by that lack of attentiveness to the fact that everybody, you know,
well, everybody responds differently
to stimuli that are out there.
Well, I think I always like what Joseph Campbell said about when people would ask him, what is the purpose of life? And he would always kind of laugh and say, well, the purpose of life is to experience it.
Yeah. Right.
And I always love that, because we have a bias to only experience the happy end, the good end, the positive end, only experience that. When in fact, our human experience involves a full spectrum, all of it. But if you fear feeling emotional pain, when in fact, emotional pain is simply a feeling that is a natural, normal expression of loss or disappointment. But if you're taught to fear that, then that part of self that is holding that emotional pain gets exiled into unconsciousness. And that's why, you know, we go away half numbed out. You know, the use of numbing agents, especially right now, is just rampant. I mean, rampant. And I'm not talking about just alcohol and drugs, but, you know, the use of the internet, you know, shopping, you know, all sorts of ways to numb out and not feel whatever it is that we're feeling, to not get real. So,
well,
again,
it's almost like people want instant gratification for everything. If you go on TikTok and you can watch a video and feel good, great. We've talked on our show about people taking walks together, putting down the phones and just communication, like what you're doing with us, communication. And it seems as our world has taken like a different turn. Everybody and their brother and their mother and their sister, everyone is doing something different to heal themselves, but it's just instantly. It's not long term. Now, I remember listening to you at one of your seminars, and something that hit me really in the heart is when you made a statement and you said that death teaches us how to live. Could you expand a little bit on that? Because I think what you said about life experiences is so true. People go through their lives as zombies and they just don't think like what experience they're getting from it. But it does teach us. Life is an education, right?
Yes, for sure. And our job is to show up for class, right? Our job is to show up each day open-heartedly to whatever comes, you know, to be able to, as you said, experience it. But yes, we can, I think, again, we are fed this illusion, I guess I will call it. In a way, it's a half-truth, maybe it's a better way, that, you know, just be happy, just be your best self, just be the best version of yourself. And what happens is, what I have found with people is they will tell me things like, well, yeah, why can't I do that? There must be something wrong with me. And then they feel guilty that they can't just pop right back. You know, yes, maybe this happened a long time ago. Why is it bothering me? There must be something wrong with me. See, that's a soul injury. That's where you feel, then you start adding, feeling inadequate and something wrong. You know, at Opus Peace, we believe that you already have everything you need in order to be whole. You have everything you need in order to experience whatever is happening in this moment, in this nowness.
Yeah.
It's a matter of learning how to open up to it and not and to remove the fear of feeling it.
Yeah.
Because it all doesn't feel great. You know, it is.
And you know, there are times when it's okay not to feel great all the time, right? There are times when it's okay to feel sad and lonely and something is wrong. I mean,
because there is something wrong.
Right, we have to validate our emotional pain. I mean, if you not everybody wakes up every day and they're going to cook curry chicken and have a party in their house like I do, you know? You can validate emotional pain because I think when you validate the pain and you look at the source of that pain, you can help yourself.
Well, here's kind of the secret how I view what you just said, and it's this. We are sent messages by friends, relatives, the TV, you know, the internet that tell us that we need to be 100% all the time. Well, that's just not possible. To be fully conscious does not mean to be 100% conscious all the time. But what can we do? We can wake up and be 100% conscious to whatever percent I am right now. So maybe I'm only 25% of my full self right now today. And there can be lots of reasons for that. But if I can wake up and own that, if I can give 100% of my consciousness to that 25% that is willing to show up today, wow.
Yeah.
That's a fully awake person. And there's a huge difference between that, because that part of me that's feeling small and weak, that's a part of me that matters, that needs my attention. So instead of just covering it up and saying, well, I'm just going to forget that and I'm just going to be strong today, I'm just going to overcome that, it's let me pay attention to that. Let me give that full, let me give 100% consciousness to that part of me.
Right. And you know, Deborah, I think it's important for us to tell people that healing our wounds from inside out, it's a process. It takes time, patience, and commitment. And yeah. Also, it's an education about self-care, how to care for yourself emotionally and financially. And, you know, whatever it takes to heal yourself, it's not just mental, it's physical, it's financial, it's emotional. Some of us have wounds that we don't see, but everything takes time. And also, I think on our show, we've talked a lot about forgiveness. Sometimes when you learn to forgive, you also forgive. You don't have to go back in that situation again, but when you forgive, you're healing yourself as well.
Yeah. Yeah, you're really talking a lot. What I hear you saying essentially is self-compassion. And the self-compassioning process does take time because it is a process, you know. And again, in our instant gratification that you brought up, you know, we just want something, you know, to heal us and cure us like that. You know, we want a pill, just take this away. We want magic, you know, just wave the magic wand and, you know, suddenly my problem disappears. I mean, we're kind of fed that as opposed to being able to learn how to, I would say, learn how to suffer successfully, successful suffering. I mean, that sounds like an oxymoron. It's like, who in the world, why would I want to be able to do that? And yet I think that's a valid goal, because life, there is suffering in life. No one escapes this earthly life without some suffering. And if we can learn, if you, you know, read any of the great philosophers, that's really what they're talking about, is this is how you suffer successfully, so that you become more of who you are, not less of who you are.
Right. And sometimes you have to acknowledge where your pain is coming from in order to heal. I mean, you can't, you can't fix it until you could acknowledge and identify where it's coming from. But I wanted to ask you really quick with the remaining time, there's a couple of events coming up that I want you to share with our listening audience. You've got something coming up on February 2nd, which I took part in that last year as well. And then you have the you have an 8-hour collaboration coming up with the college. Where is that college? In St. Pete. So talk to us a little bit about that.
Well, the college in St. Pete is St. Petersburg College, and they have given us a grant for any of your listeners who live in Florida. St. Petersburg College will pay for us to come put on a one-day soul injury workshop anywhere in the state of Florida. So you can put it on for your company or your community. You don't have to pay it anything to do it. You only have to provide a venue, and St. Pete College will take care of everything else. So that's an opportunity. I would hope that a lot of your listeners would want to benefit from, really. You mentioned the February 2nd. Yes, every year on February 2nd, we do what we call National Anchor Your Heart Day. And I just want you to imagine the whole world, because we will have people, it's an international thing that people from all over the world. Last year we had more than 800 people gathered together virtually around the globe, and as many or more afterward that listen to the recording. But the whole world getting still for just 3 minutes, anchoring our heart and taking just 3 minutes to get real with whatever is inside our heart, inside ourself, getting real with that. So we have a three-step process that helps us to become more conscious of our own self and to get more real. So that will happen on February 2nd. And as I said, it is preceded by a free, all of this is free, by a free one-hour webinar on letting death wake you up now to how to live more consciously right now. So that happens on February 2nd.
Yes, and where can people find your books?
Yes, if you go online to opuspeace.org, opuspeace.org, or you can go to soulinjury.org, either one, and that is our website, and you will see a place there to purchase that book, and it will be mailed to you within a week. You should receive it, and we would love to hear from you, gathering stories about the soul injury book and the impact that it's having on people.
Yeah. You know, Deborah, with the last minute we have left, you know, our country, we talk a lot about mental health and mental illness. But, you know, I've been following you for a while, and, you know, it's so interesting that what you've developed with soul injury. But I would say things like anxiety and depression and other mental health illnesses that significantly impact people's lives, they are soul wounds. And some of them are wounds that people have been traumatized since they were children, and it never healed. So how do we get more people to understand that it's okay to talk about mental illness? It's okay to seek treatment from a professional person, a doctor or a nurse practitioner such as yourself, but at the same time we have to identify the root cause and what happened to get us to that point where we're experiencing so much distress in life.
Yeah, well, certainly, I mean, the stigma of mental health issues has lessened over the decades, thank God. It's still not there, obviously, but it has gotten better, and that definitely helps. I think the other thing is just recognizing for people to say, to reach out and ask for help is an act of courage. It doesn't mean you're weak. It means that you have some self-compassion, that you want to be whole, that you want wholeness restored. So I think, again, that's an act. You meet your brave self when you're willing to be vulnerable, when you're willing to meet your weak, small self that's inside that you've been running from and ashamed of. You know, that's where your brave self exists, because, I mean, that's the reason that part of self is what's holding your hurt for you right now.
Right. And you know, we focus so much on if somebody has an elevated heart rate or they're hypertensive or if they have a medical condition. But a lot of people don't realize that if you can help process emotions, that can provide guidance for your soul, how to heal and reduce your blood pressure and do things like that. Because a lot of people they look at emotions and they're like, oh, just get a grip on it. You know, you'll be fine. But it's not so. I think mental health and physical health, they go hand in hand.
Well, you know, we use a lot of the work by Bessel van der Kolk. He wrote the book, The Body Keeps the Score. And that's exactly, the research is replete nowadays with exactly what you're saying, that your body is your mind. Your body, mind, and spirit are one. They're not just related or different, they are one. So absolutely. You can, your soul is going to be manifest in your body, and your feelings are like the weather, you know, the thermometer of your soul, giving you indicators of what's going on. But again, and the other thing I think that happens is we worship our conscious mind and we poo-poo our unconscious mind. And yet again, the research is pretty clear that most of your mind, some say even up to 90% of your mind is unconscious. So we do need to be paying attention.
Deborah, I think you're Hindu, I swear. Because every time I talk to you, you sound like one of the yogis or the sages from India. This is exactly what they used to teach us when we were children. Body, mind, and spirit. And I know you had an Indian friend that helped you a lot.
A dear friend, and I went to India with her and lived with her family for 3 weeks. It was fascinating. So I'm not surprised.
So you went home.
yeah, maybe so.
Well, give us the website one more time before we go to the second segment. And I just want to tell you, it's such a pleasure to have you in my life and to teach me and our listeners here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, Deborah Grassman. Every time we speak to you, we learn something and you share such wisdom with our audience. And I know that there are people that are hurting out there the first week in 2026 that needed to hear from you how to heal themselves and find that root cause and try to do whatever they can to become whole again. So thank you for that.
Oh, well, you are so welcome. And I do so hope that they will take a peek into the book. Again, it's on soulinjury.org or opuspeace.org. You can find the book there. And really, it's I'm going to say it's not as complicated and that as you might think. It does take a bit of courage, but the book will give you a step-by-step process, step-by-step recipe of how to do it. And I would definitely encourage your readers to consider joining the book community.
Make sure as we put this out, we will make sure that all of this, as well as this broadcast, is put out and information to all of the classes. And, of course, the St. Pete College information. That's fantastic. We're going to listen to our sponsors real quickly, and we'll be right back with Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right after these messages. Thank you, Deborah.
Thank you, Ellen and Sita.
Thank you. Happy New Year.
Cloud9 Mattress and Furniture is a family-owned furniture dealer featuring the best and most affordable brands. They offer all servicing for free. Delivery, setup, and home, removal of old furniture, and warranty. Work with a reputable and experienced local business as they strive for excellence with their customers. Scotty's been in the mattress and furniture business for 32 years. You can shop online, call, or stop into the showroom to place an order. They are conveniently located inside the Merritt Square Mall and service all of Brevard County in Central Florida. Super savings sale happening now. That's Cloud9 Mattress and Furniture, 321-459-2473. Visit them on the web at Cloud9. That's Cloud9, furniture.com. Again, 321-459-2473 for Cloud9, mattress and furniture. Located in Titusville, Florida, Dixie Crossroads has been serving great tasting seafood, char-grilled steaks, prime rib, chicken, fresh salads, and their famous corn fritters for over 31 years. The menu features the very best local shrimp and fish from Port Canaveral and ranges from low-cost sandwiches and baskets to high-end seafood combos. Visit this Florida favorite at 1475 Garden Street in Titusville. That's Dixie Crossroads, 321-268-5000. 321-268-5000. Or visit them on the web at dixiecrossroads.com. Jotkoff Financial Group is a certified public accounting and a registered investment advisory firm with over 30 years of productive relationships with clients. Jotkoff Financial Group can assist you in meeting your accounting, tax, and business consulting and financial planning and insurance needs without expanding your internal workforce. With three locations here in Florida, here in Brevard County, Broward County, and Nassau County. Contact Jotkoff Financial Group here in Brevard at 321-984-7345. Located at 1122 South Wickham Road in Melbourne, that's Jotkoff Financial Group. On the web, you'll find them at www.jotkoff, that's JOTKOFF.com. Call the professionals at Jotkoff Financial Group today.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. What a great first segment with our friend Deborah Grassman. She always brightens up my day because she's so real. My name is Sita Begee. This show is called Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. Ellen O'Neill is here. Allie's here. Danny's here. And we're heard on AM 1510, WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and all over God's magnificent planet.
That's right. 1510 WWBC.com. You can hit that listen live button and get us on any one of your streaming devices. And then, of course, we also archive the shows there each and every Monday, 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, under Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. You can download it there. We share it all of our social media as well as our website, SitaMediaInc.com.
Right. And I don't know, you know, the good Lord always points me in the direction of such wonderful people to be guests on our show. And I was minding my business and I started reading about the Florida end of life options. And I ran into Mr. Tony Ray and I invited him to come on our show. So welcome for being a guest on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.
Well, thank you, Sita. I appreciate it very much. It's a pleasure to be here. And this is such an important topic that so many people in Florida particularly are interested in.
That's right. And, you know, for you, this morning, because of the topics we were speaking about with soul injury and the right to die if you choose to, for whatever reason, and being a long-term care nurse, I understand that completely. I saw this beautiful meme and it says, what really matters at the end of life? In the end, all that truly matters is how you lived, how you loved, and how you made people feel. Of course, if Brad Pitt is out there, I'm still because that makes me feel good, right? Yeah. So the Florida End of Life Options, it's an organization, it's a grassroots movement determined to raise awareness and fight for expanding end-of-life options in the state of Florida. And I read that only one in five American lives in a jurisdiction with access to medical aid in dying. So talk to us a little bit. Why is the topic of leaving our planet such a difficult one for so many families in the United States? People are so excited when they're pregnant and they're given birth. Right. But then there's a dash from birth to when God takes you home. Nobody wants to talk about that part. your talk to us, Mr. Ray, about that, because it goes hand in hand. We're all born to die.
Yeah, we all are going to die. And, you know, it really boils down to, as a developed country, the people in the United States are behind most of the other countries of our status. They don't prepare for death. We don't talk about death. We don't have conversations with our loved ones about how we want our life to end. And it's so important, because until you accept the fact that you're going to die, you're never really going to live those final days.
That's right.
When you take that burden off, that you've accepted that you're going to die, and you're also going to let your feelings and wishes known to your family, that's a huge, huge benefit.
It's a win-win.
It's a win-win.
Because the thing is, you know, when you support the Florida end-of-life options, it's an opportunity to make a difference in human suffering. People will talk about a pet suffering, and they will call the vet to euthanize that pet because they don't want to see the pet
suffer.
But human beings, they don't do that. And is, I mean, I often wonder, why is that happening?
I think the reason is, for most people, it'll be a moral or religious objection, that their thought is only God can give life and only God can take in life. My personal belief is that, why would there be the necessary to suffer at end of life? Why shouldn't you be able to make that decision? You have free will granted to you by God. Why can't you make that decision to determine the place and time of your death if you are already in that process of dying?
And die pain-free,
yes,
right?
Yes.
So talk a little bit exactly. When people say death with dignity, what are they talking about?
Well, death with dignity really is a personal statement. Everybody has their own idea of what they perceive as a dignified death or a good death. Some people will suffer through end of life based on their religious beliefs. For us, anyone who has a concept of how they want to die, if your death meets your ideas, your beliefs, your values, that is a death with dignity to you, because it's based on your beliefs and values.
Yeah. So what is the current status of the medical aid in dying legislation, which is normally called MAID?
Yes, MAID is the shorthand for medical aid in dying. Currently, there are 13 states in the U.S. that have medical aid in dying laws, and by the end of this month, January 2026, New York will also enact a medical aid in dying law, so that'll be 14 states. In Florida, we have a proposed legislation called the Florida End-of-Life Options Act, and for the last 3 years, we have been sponsored in both houses of the Florida legislature.
Yeah.
This year, we are yet to find a House sponsor, but we're working on that today and through the end of the week for the deadline. But it really means a lot for people that will be able to have the ability to make healthcare decisions at the end of life.
And to do so while they still have their sound body and mind.
Yes, there are requirements based on all of the laws. Oregon was the first state in the U.S. in 1997. All of the subsequent laws have been modeled after Oregon's, as has our bill. And there are four main requirements. You must be an adult. You must be a resident of the state of Florida. You must be have a terminal diagnosis with less than 6 months to live as diagnosed by two independent physicians. And most importantly, what separates us from other countries that have euthanasia laws, which euthanasia is not allowed in the U.S., is the patient must be able to self-administer the medication.
Right. And I like that there are safeguards, Because a lot of people, once you make that decision, they're afraid for the patient or the person who decided to die with dignity. But there are safeguards in place. It's not like you're going to drop a whole 30 cc's of morphine down somebody's throat.
That's true. The doctors also are required to determine that you have the mental capacity to make such a healthcare decision, that you understand the consequences of making this decision, and you will be also given options, the things like hospice, palliative care, seeking additional treatments. So there are a full set of requirements. There are safeguards. Physicians, hospitals, hospices have the right to opt out of this process. There can be no punitive damage to a physician or a healthcare facility if they choose not to participate.
So what would you say if somebody asked you what is the mission of Florida Death with Dignity?
Our mission is basically education. That is 90% of our efforts because there are so many people that have a misconception of what this is. They think of Jack Kevorkian and what he did in the 80s and 90s, and they think of the processes that other countries might have. The main difference is there are countries in the world that allow euthanasia. In the United States, euthanasia is illegal in all 50 states, and it really makes...
So you want to raise awareness.
Yes.
So that people, when they're getting together for 4th of July, Memorial Day, a birthday party, they can make these decisions, because the hospital lobby or the hospital corridor outside of a person's room is not the place to have this discussion.
Right. Preparation and being aware of what is entailed at end of life is so important. And Americans are way behind the curve in that.
Yes.
Advanced directives, letting your family know that you may want to use medical aid in dying if it was legal in Florida. These are so important. People need to communicate with their loved ones.
Yeah. And so who would be opposing people making decisions to die with dignity? What type of opposition do you have? Because, you know, as a long-term care nurse, I see this a lot myself when someone has gotten to that point where they have a terminal illness and they've got a catheter, a G-tube, a wound vac. They've got, you know, multiple wounds on their body from families who want them to stay alive, and they don't have enough staff or helping to turn them side to side. We see a human being that's a shell of their former self that's actually suffering.
Right.
And who would be opposing and wanting someone to remain in that state until they stop breathing?
Historically, religious organizations, churches, are the main opposition to medical aid in dying. Even though the hierarchy or the leaders of these churches and religions are opposed to it, poll after poll have shown that the parishioners of all of the major religions in the U.S. are in favor of medical aid in dying. And usually this is in the range of 65 to 70% support. We did a poll here in Florida in August, which showed that 65% of Floridians believe that someone who is terminally ill should have the option to medical aid in dying if they chose.
Yeah. We all just saw the granddaughter of President Kennedy, Tatiana, just passed away. And what a brave, beautiful soul that she made that decision. So that we can see death with dignity. And I think we all watched that, a young woman, 35 years of age, and I know I felt brokenhearted over that. I felt like she was a family member. But that's basically, that was a decision she made as well.
Yes, and I'm sure that she had long discussions with her doctors about alternative treatments and things like that. But there comes a point when there is no curative treatments available. There's nothing left but to live out your days. Being able to make this decision to utilize medical aid in dying frees someone up. when they know that they can avoid the pain, the suffering, the elongated, extended time in a hospital, having...
Well, the suffering.
The suffering, yes.
So from what I understand, Mr. Ree, you are the co-founder of the Florida End of Life Options, and you are urging the lawmakers here in Brevard, the legislative delegation, to respect the right. That's a big word there, respect.
Right.
The right of Floridians with terminal illnesses to have medical freedom. We all talk about freedom and democracy, except when it comes to the end of life. Yes. People get really clamped up. But, I mean, if you go to a funeral home and you see the body in a box and they're about to put it in the crematorium, it's a sense of relief if that person was suffering. So why is there such a pushback for people to respect the end-of-life decisions made by other humans?
I think for legislators, it's lobbying power by powerful organizations and religious and business-wise that do not want to see this kind of legislation in Florida. It boils possibly down to money, or in the case of religious groups, they don't believe in this process. But the whole process is originated, initiated by the patient. It is controlled by the patients through the whole process of first request to a last request 2 weeks later. And the patient can rescind the authority to proceed by saying so. So it really comes down to, is patient controlled, is patient initiated, and is patient administered.
Yeah, and the patients are protected by their physicians.
Yes.
It seems to me as though it's the patients and the physicians and the families, as well as clergy, work hand in hand to end the suffering of the person. It's not one person making the decisions. A lot of people get their church involved, if they're Hindu, Muslim, Christian, whatever it is, Jewish. I know we just had a patient who had her rabbi come to administer to her the last rites, so speak to her about death and dying, a lady in hospice, and it happens, but it has to be a collaborative effort.
Right. That's the importance of talking with your loved ones.
Mm-hmm.
If you can relate to them what you want your end of life to look like, the things that you don't want to be put on machines that comes a point where you reach that all that is just extending life when life may not be worth living to you personally. Is that personal decision that you make, and you let your family, your church, everyone know where you stand.
So the people who oppose letting terminally ill people die with dignity, they allege, some of them, that these laws encourages older folks, people with disabilities, minorities, or poor, uneducated, uninsured, and other marginalized persons to prematurely end their lives. But here's the thing, when those same people are alive and well, a lot of the politicians cut the benefits for those people as well. So how can you care about them if they decide that they're terminally ill and they would like to leave the planet, but when they're alive and well, you don't want to pay for a ramp for a wheelchair, you don't want to give them expand Medicaid to help them, or get a nursing assistant or nurse to their home to help them, or worse yet, elderly patients who need dentures, eyeglasses, and things like that, you don't pay for that. So you're it's kind of like, it doesn't make any sense.
I agree with you 100% of that, Sita, that there's so many instances of things that the government won't do for someone.
While they're alive.
Yeah, while they're alive. And then they try to control a person who's dying, and it should be that person's decision.
Right, and no one is forced or obligated or encouraged to use these laws. We educate people and tell them, this is the situation. What would you like? Life is a choice.
Life is a choice.
And so, well, what can we do here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends to spread the word that the end of life issues is not somebody else making the decision, you are?
Yeah.
Give us the website where someone could volunteer or get involved. I know there are ways that people can volunteer, or maybe they could support you through donations, communications, and things like that.
Our website is www.floridaendoflifeoptions.org. And we also have a Facebook page, which we keep our followers abreast of what's happening in Florida and around the nation. And our organization, as I mentioned earlier, is really about education. So we offer presentations to small groups, large groups, trying to make sure everyone understands the full and true, correct explanation of what medical aid in dying is, not what they're hearing on
social media or from the politicians. Yeah. And we might add that every state is different how the medications are administered. They tell you not to take it in a public place and all that. They educate you.
Right, exactly. Basically, all of the states have the same requirements and safeguards pretty much the full time. But there are things that you should be aware of, that if you go, some states require that you be a resident. There are two states, Vermont and also Oregon, which do not have a residency requirement.
Right. So, and I've seen, you know, as a long-term care nurse, when you talk to people, when you talk to your neighbors, most people who are dying would like to die at home.
Yes.
Surrounded by their loved ones. And so death with dignity legislation yields numerous direct and indirect benefits, such as for patients with terminal illnesses, the greatest comfort of these laws is having the freedom to control your body, mind, and spirit until the end.
Exactly. Also, when a state gets close to having a law or has a law, the usage of hospice goes up. The states that have laws for 10 or 15 years, like Oregon and Washington and California, have the highest percentage of people in hospice than the other states. It's all about the education. People become aware of this option, and it spurs conversations with your doctor. It may spur conversation with your family, especially when you may show interest in researching what medical aid
and if you're suffering. So the history of MAID in the U.S., how long has it been around?
1997, Oregon became the first state. And now, like I said earlier, there's when New York signs in the end of this month, it'll be 14. And that'll put it at over 30% of the U.S. population.
Yeah. And, you know, people would say all the time, I'm so grateful that my mother or my aunt or my father or my loved one, my spouse, was able to pass away from this earth pain-free and fearlessly surrounded by family. That's what it should be. It shouldn't be in a hospital with machines attached to you and you suffered until the end.
I agree with you 100%. They're being in this, starting this organization about 5 years ago, I have heard a lot of stories of people who have watched the family member suffer terribly at the end of life. My wife and I, with her Aunt Connie. But all of this suffering, when someone is already in the dying process, they've been diagnosed with a terminal illness, they have cancer that maybe have come back again, and the suffering does no good to anyone.
That's right.
So why shouldn't you have the option, if you're terminal and you meet those five requirements, to make the decision based on your own beliefs and values?
Yeah, we make decisions our entire life about what car we're going to drive, where we're going to work, who we're going to marry, who we're going to fall in love with, what we're going to eat for dinner. I think we should be able to make that decision if we're deemed in a situation where it's a terminal illness. And you know what? If you, the doctor said you would live 6 months, but you live a year or two, whoop-de-doo
for you.
No, it's called palliative care. We're all on palliative care. The whole world is. Because you don't know what else is coming,
exactly.
Right? So I would say to our politicians, before you oppose something that would actually help people to make a choice when the end of life come to ease suffering and pain, maybe you ought to expand Medicaid expansion for the people who needs it.
Right.
You know?
I agree.
And give us a website one more time and then we're gone.
It's www.floridaendoflifeoptions.org.
Well, Tony Ray, thank you so much for sharing all of that knowledge and great information. We'll make sure we put it on our website and all of our information as well. Thanks again, everyone, and Happy New Year from Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. Thank you so much for tuning in. Make sure you tune in all of 2026 each and every Monday, 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.